Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's November 2nd, 2012. You're listening to the best poker cast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Did you happen to catch any of the World Series this time around?
See, I knew you were going to ask me that because you just like to embarrass me. No, I did not catch one single minute of the World Series on the television, on the teletubes.
Yeah, I want to understand this. That's why I asked. I don't understand this. So tell me about this.
Well, I was just busy, so.
But could you have seen it on TV if you wanted to?
Well, yeah, I guess where I tuned in Monday night, I guess, right?
Uh-huh.
And it was like 8 o'clock or so. No, it wasn't Monday. It was Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Because I was out of town Monday. So I got back Tuesday, went to watch it at night, and I guess I tuned in before it started. You know, I've been traveling, I haven't paying attention to exactly when it's on and everything,
yeah.
And I went to ESPN and it wasn't on yet, so, you know, I'm a child of the 80s, so short attention span,
yeah.
I switch over to HBO and watch Die Hard for the 4,000th time or something like that, I totally forgot, so then when it got down to three-handed, I woke up that morning, I assumed it was still going on, which it was, and for whatever reason... I didn't realize that they weren't doing the quick turnaround show at night.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured, oh, I'll just watch that. But I was up, like, at 6 a.m. Went to, you know, the World Series website to see if it was over yet. And it wasn't. And they're still three-handed. And I'm like, all right, well, I'll put it on in the background on the ESPN 360 or whatever the website is thing, right?
Yeah.
And I was having it in the background. I don't need to watch it and get some work done, but I'll listen to it at least, and now I'll know what's going on. Well, you know, when you do it on the website, you have to be one of these six cable providers in order to watch it on the web. And not to get too far off track, but I found a workaround on my drive up to Jacksonville this week, and I was able to watch the Ohio State game while Laura drove all the way up there. And I didn't want to use that workaround again because I don't think it was really proper, if that
nice.
Makes sense. So I'm like, I'm surely not going to waste it again on the World Series. I'll watch it tonight. Well, so I couldn't get in, right? So then I just got busy working, and then it was over, and I'm like, all right. And then that's when I realized that they don't do the thing at night anymore. And I could have just watched it on my television that morning while I was working. And so, yeah, it's an epic World Series poker fail from someone that should never have experienced this epic fail.
Because within our internal... company, we had some emails being exchanged, and someone mentions, hey, are you watching the World Series? And I'm like, I am, because I watched it almost all night, and then I stayed up as long as I could, fell asleep, woke up to turn on TV to see, you know, if their winner was in there. They were still on TV, so I'm like, I'm watching it. And then Scott sends this cryptic email about, I can't watch it online because of my... And I'm like, why would you watch it? What are you talking about? And he's like, my cable provider. And I'm like, what are you telling me? That DirecTV doesn't have ESPN? I don't get it. I was trying to figure that email out, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just too busy with what I have to do for the magazine right now to have this conversation, but let's have it on the show. So you were just totally confused as to what was going on, really.
Yeah, I mean, again, this gets back to the whole thing. I can't watch poker on TV. It's just boring to me now, and particularly live poker. And even having on the background, I think, would just probably annoy me a little bit. So, you know, that's kind of why I wanted to see the... Even though I would know that Greg Merson already won, I still would have watched a little bit so I could talk more intelligently about these people on the show at night. But they don't do it anymore, which, you know, we can get into that whole thing because there's a good discussion going about that on our forum right now. But, you know, I just didn't really have any desire to sit there and do what you do and sit up all night watching people play poker. It's just not what I can do.
Well, you can now color me in the Scott Long camp because I'm tired of watching. It was literally like watching.
So if you stayed up all night.
Well, I mean, I wanted to see the conclusion. I was hoping that someone would it would end and I could start thinking
that's
about our magazine. Yeah.
You know, I've always thought, you know, at some point I am going to be at that final table, right?
Mm.
Of course, it's completely in my dreams, right? But, you know, still. And my lovely wife, who I love more than anything in the world, will obviously fly out there in my dream and sit there and cheer me on and, you know, wear the Annie patches and stuff and, you know, get the gratuitous camera shots. Lord Long, Scott's wife, looking pensive as I'm, you know, playing some hand, right? And I always knew that as soon as I was done, she would divorce me. And not just because I'm rich now and she can get half of it, because she would just blow her brains out sitting there watching me play cards. I mean, I can't think of something more boring of her watching me do, except maybe golf, than sit there and play cards. I mean, she would never come to the poker room and sit there and watch me play cards. She certainly doesn't, when she comes home from work and wherever in the home game, doesn't sit down and go, hey, let me watch.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's boring.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm the only poker player that thinks it's boring. But, you know, this is a larger discussion about how television made poker not boring by, you know, cutting it up and making it dramatic and things like that. And now it's live. So from a poker player, obviously it's very exciting to watch it live in that you don't know what's happening. You don't know who's going to win. So that part's still exciting to me. But the fact that, you know, if it's a football game, I know it's going to be over at 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
Roughly, you know, it could go to overtime, maybe go to five if it's really bad. But I know what I'm committing to. When I sit there and watch a poker tournament, I have absolutely no idea what I'm committing to. And certainly this year, I think people that committed to watching the whole thing probably regret it as much as you do too, because it went on forever.
Yeah, 12 hours, three-handed. I mean, that's just crazy. And here's the thing: is when they did the turnaround, it was exciting because if you tried not to find out who won, then it was almost like it was live, yet it wasn't because they were editing it because they just did this massive job. You knew it was going to end at 11 o'clock that night.
That's true.
And watching it live is cool when they're going from table to table to table, and they're, you know, they got his Fondiari with his brilliant, you know, putting people on hands kind of stuff. But when it's three-handed and you have two very deliberate players who take a long time to react and to make their move, it is like watching paint dry. And I loved the live stuff. You can go back to a bunch of our shows in the past and hear me saying how the live poker got me excited again to watch it. But, you know, it was fun when it was a full field and they were going from table to table and they had 10-handed and the mics were turned up and you could hear the conversations and you were getting stuff in real time. But when it's this way, and it's 50-minute delay, and you're sitting there watching Jesse Sylvia take between 3 and 7 minutes to make a decision. I mean, and all you got to do, all you have, and really kudos to Lon McCarron to fill in the time, to be honest. He had a lot of poignant questions and things to fill that dead air, and he did it for like 13 hours. I don't know how he did it, but I really did not want to watch anymore. I literally tried. I was falling asleep and opening one eye just to see if it was over yet, and it wasn't. I closed the eye, and you know what I mean? It was absolutely painful to watch. And there weren't even very many decent hands, like as far as, you know, all-ins. And they played so deliberately, and they played so cautiously for the most part that I couldn't take it. And I hope they go back to the way they did it before, because it was so weird, too, to go from the live one drop thing to tape stuff to the live final table where it was just boring. It was such a anticlimactic way to go, and to know that it wrapped up at like 8 in the morning or 9 in the morning Eastern time, you know, who the hell watched that? And ESPN's gotta be killing themselves for showing that for 14 hours. They gotta regret that on their major network too, not on like ESPN3 or whatever. It was on ESPN. That had to kill them.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's some of the chatter now is, I mean, you can't expect that that three-handed is going to go that long. I mean, that's a little out of the norm, and it was pretty close to a record, I believe, right?
Yeah, it was. Three-handed was 12 hours. It was the record, I think.
But, you know, when you think of ESPN, you think of SportsCenter. I mean, there are guys that plan their lives around SportsCenter, even though it's on 47 times during the day.
Right.
And I could see them waking up, getting their morning coffee, sit down to find out what the chatter is, and what the hell? Who are these guys? And it goes on forever, and yeah, so, I mean, again, I think this is one of those things, we'll see what happens now, based on, you know, it going this long, but, you know, this is one of the reasons people have never done live poker before, because it is completely unpredictable.
Yeah. I mean, I know they put the ticker at the bottom saying, breaking news, you know, ESPN2 is now showing SportsCenter or whatever. So, I mean, people knew what to do after that, but absolutely. I mean, your flagship network, your number one ESPN, being taken up by this three guys standing there staring at cards that nobody knows what they are until after the hand is over. It had to be made for some of the most boring television on the major network in history. I mean, and I feel bad because, you know, we're poker publishers of a national magazine, we promote the game, and I'm only saying this to try to enhance it, trying to make them make it better so that our fans won't get discouraged. You know, if casual fans turned it on, they'd have turned it off.
Yeah,
and that's not good. So I mean, yeah, we talked,
and I'm wondering why they didn't switch it over to one of the other networks.
Me too, I am wondering about that.
You know, I mean, I think that should have been part of the contract. You know, hey, you know, heaven forbid this thing goes on forever, you know. Obviously, people expect to see SportsCenter at 6 a.m. or whatever time SportsCenter comes on first. At that point, we're going to switch it over to ESPN, to the Deuce, or, you know, one of these other channels.
Yeah, at 11, even at 11 p.m., when they go to their normal SportsCenter for the 11 p.m. wrap-up that night, they should have said, Lon McCarron at the end, said, okay, your coverage is now continuing on ESPN2, and then in the contract, it would say, on ESPN, we would have something on the screen saying, poker coverage, World Series, whatever, on ESPN2 now. And then
it was simply,
I mean, even that, it's still kind of brutal, but at least you know, you get off the major network.
Well, they do that before, too. I mean, with when games run late, you know, they're, you know, hey, we're starting it on ESPN2 now, we're moving it over, you know. So, I mean, there's precedent for it. So, you know, maybe a lot of this was just in the contract. I mean, maybe ESPN just paid a crap ton for this, and it was part of the contract or whatever, and this is just what they had to do, and then they rolled the dice and lost. And maybe they rolled the dice and they don't think they lost. I mean, who are we to say? I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's not our network, you know. But if it is people like us saying it, then I got to think some executives there that don't give a crap about poker are questioning some people right now.
Yeah, absolutely. But let's get to the news. Greg Merson did win the world title, and it's a great story too, don't you think? I mean, the kid, he's 24 years old from Maryland, so you know that Lon McCarron and Norman Chad had a lot of fun with that, with Norman Chad's affection for University of Maryland, which is where he went to school. The kid went to school there, but dropped out. He picked up a drug habit while he was at college, and then credits poker for turning his life around. He actually was playing poker, got hooked on drugs, then poker was funding his drug habit. Then he got off of drugs because of poker, but then had a fallen off the wagon kind of thing. And then the unique thing about this story was he was determined to detoxify himself, and he locked himself into his Aria hotel room for 3 days straight without talking to anybody, doing anything, and just went through hell, but came out on the other side clean. And now he's been clean ever since, and he credits poker. He said he felt that poker was more important to him than getting high or whatever. And now he doesn't want to ever give up the life of poker, and so he wants to never go back to this. He won't even drink a beer, which is really what you're supposed to. You're really not supposed to have any sort of
right. Absolutely.
So congratulations to him. It was pretty amazing to watch. He actually went up and down a lot too. He started, obviously, he started the final table, I think, third in chips behind Sylvia and one other player, but you know, he went up and down, up and down. And then when he got the chip lead, he was up at like 109 million, and the other guys had like 50 and 40 or something of that nature. And then he came all the way back to the field, and it was like, holy cow, is he going to blow it? Because he was so, you know, even keel. He didn't have a lot of emotions either way. And, you know, and he did it. He ended up, you know, pulling it off. But the final hand was amazing. We got other stuff to talk about too, but the final hand was pretty remarkable to me, and I'll let you know what it was when we get to it. But yeah, all final three of those guys we're talking about were 24 or younger.
Yeah, which, you know, at this point it's almost sounding like a broken record, right? But the more we say it, the more it's cementing that it's getting tougher for us geezers to feel like we can compete at this level, right?
Yeah, and they actually went through the decades of how many 24-year-olds were at the final table, or 20-year-olds, somebody in the 20-somethings, so were in the final table, and it was like, in one decade, there was like one, and in the next decade, there was like three, and then last decade, it was like, and then all of a sudden, now that's all it is 24-year-olds, you know, as far as, or champions, whatever, so it was pretty crazy. But it was amazing that the three-handed took 11... Oh, it took 12 hours. I hate when they say 11 hours and 59 minutes. You can't tell me that there wasn't an extra minute there when they were three-handed or something. So, but yeah, 12 hours of three-handed and then 17 hands to end heads up. That was remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. Now, last year, Scott, there wasn't a double bracelet winner, right?
Right, right. And I remember specifically when the press release came out after this that you chided me. We were talking about at the end of the World Series way back in July or August, whenever, and I'm like, I can't believe there wasn't a double bracelet winner this year. And then you said, yet.
That's right.
I'm like, there still could be someone. I'm like, okay, yeah, right, whatever, Chris. So, yeah, of course, here I am eating crow now, because goes ahead, wins the title, he becomes the double bracelet winner this year. Nips Phil Helmuth for the Player of the Year title. So, you know, a lot going on here for Greg at this. A lot on the line.
Yep. Oh, and don't forget, too, though, actually, by Helmuth winning a bracelet in Europe, he won two bracelets this year.
True.
I don't think they consider that the same thing. They mean in the same World Series. So, but yeah, you're right. Two World Series bracelets. That gave him Player of the Year. And Helmuth finishes second for a third time in the Player of the Year race. He must have been just, you know, chomping at the bit the whole time, and I'm sure he was ticked off because he's dying to get his, you know, his Player of the Year. He thinks he's so deservedly, and he does deserve it half the time. I mean, he's always the one. He's still winning bracelets when Johnny Chan and Doyle Brunson are fading, and you know, he's winning bracelets other than Hold'em now. So, and then he won a main event in Europe. So, you know, but yeah, what a run for this kid. And one of the things that I'm turning on the TV, and the first time I see him, I'm like, is that a patch that I think it is? Does that say Best Bet Jacksonville? I'm like, this kid's in Maryland. I don't even know if he goes to Florida often, but does he play there? What's the deal? So I think you were at the bottom of this, weren't you?
Yeah, actually, what was funny was that I was getting emails from other reporters and stuff and other fans and saying, what the hell?
Yeah.
They said that you were, and you called me up, and you're like, you know, hey, you're up in Jacksonville this weekend. You know what's going on? And yeah, actually, so I sat down, and this was, I was up in Jacksonville on Monday morning I got there. So this was before Greg was even moving on this thing. Right. And talking to the marketing director, and he's like, yeah, you know, we, in fact, actually, I got a press release from his agent before that mentioned it, but he's like, yeah, we decided to patch Greg Marston. We sent him a bunch of clothing, too, for all of his fans and stuff, and, you know, we'll see whether it works out for us. And so I sent him an email yesterday. I'm like, looks like you made the best bet. And I think really what it is Greg's agent lives in Jacksonville. Loves the Best Bet Jacksonville room, does a lot of business and work with them, and when he was lining up sponsors for Greg this year, went to him and got them to say, sure, we'll do it. Cool. And, you know, it's always, in my mind, it's always hard to kind of quantify the value of that kind of exposure, and certainly I'm not privy to how much money was exchanged here, but so it's hard to say that this is guaranteed to say this is amazing success, but certainly, if you're going to expend that kind of money, you want it to be on the champion.
Yeah.
that gets a lot of airtime. So I certainly don't think it was a bad thing for him. So, and nothing else, people are talking about trying exactly what you said, trying to figure out why this kid from Maryland is wearing a patch from a poker room in Florida.
I also, you know, they said that he ended the string of second place finishes that were happening for Maryland people with Daneman and the logger guy.
Yeah.
And where is this kid getting his? Because I know he played online a lot, but I wonder how is he getting so good. I know he moved to Canada to play online, but I don't think he has a lot of live experience. So it's just that much more remarkable that he wins two bracelets.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's been playing for 5 years now, so, I mean, we really haven't, I mean, outside of whatever he's moved to play online, I mean, really, you only take a year and a half off of that, so, I mean, he had a good, at least 3.5 years online, which, for a lot of players, that's all they need.
Yeah.
So, you know.
They said that, I don't know if it was him, I think it was, he was the one who played 7 million hands in his career.
Wow.
And I think that's what he said, and it was one of the final three, but I'm pretty sure it was him, and Norman Chad said something to the effect of, you know, the national average for dealers is like 35, 33 hands an hour. He said, if I played from the minute I was born, every minute until I am now, I would reach about 7 million hands, and he's 55 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's just remarkable when you think about that. You know, and this kid's played 7 million hands in less than 5 years or so. I mean, that's just, it's absolutely remarkable. But it was, you know, it was nice to watch, you know, when something this important to our industry, you know, happens, you know, you're always happy for the person to win and whatever, and to watch it play out. But and there were a lot of good stories at that final table, a lot of interesting stories, some villainous stories and whatever. But I just have to wonder if this whole delayed final tables run its course or not. I feel like it was cool in the beginning, it was this hype, it seemed like it was a lot more exciting, I think a lot more people paid attention to it, but now that we're 4 World Series in of doing this, you know, I just don't know if it's really having the same effect or not. I know we have this conversation every year.
Yeah.
But you know, it made it even more painful with this 12 hours of three-handed boring television. You know, I mean, not that that wouldn't have happened, but the whole delayed thing contributes to this, let's watch it live. Whereas in the beginning, you didn't watch it live. It was over months before, and then you watched it in November, because that's how long it took ESPN to air all the footage that they had taken over the summer.
Right.
I just think it's run its course. I really do. I don't know. I mean, I don't, not that I would like to go back to the old days where it ends in July and I'm still watching ESPN coverage in November or October, but I don't know if these players are better off and getting more exposure, and if the World Series is really getting as much exposure out of it now as they think. Maybe they are. Maybe they are. I don't know. But, you know, in our magazine...
Here's what I wonder. Okay, now, obviously, I've made my opinions very clear that I just don't enjoy watching poker on, let alone live. But I wonder if they've had success in the past, and correct me if I'm wrong, in doing kind of these what I call flash episodes, where they put together something really quickly that day based on, you know, the play from that day. And certainly they do it every night with sports in general, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's what SportsCenter is, kind of a summary of it. I wonder if it would draw more interest if they would get away from feeling like they have to show nothing but hands, and of course there's little stock clips, and just do a 2-hour nightly show. It doesn't get it doesn't have to be on the flagship, it could be on the Deuce or some other channel, every night during the World Series, that just, you know, maybe they show, maybe it's a hand of the day or a couple of hands where they show it from completion, and then some interviews and some analysis. That, I think, might be a lot more interesting to the casual fan. Certainly be more interesting to me.
Hmm.
Well, it would keep it fresh that day, so people are paying attention to what's going on, and maybe even getting people to watch the pay-per-view or whatever they do and that. And just do it that way. Now, we have talked about the delayed thing, and I've been a big proponent of the delayed file table, but I gotta admit, this isn't really in our anti-up wheelhouse. I mean, we're focused on recreational players, and I don't think any of these players really would be considered recreational players that made it this year. This was the first year that, to be honest, I just kind of forgot that it was happening.
Hmm.
And, you know, I did a Fifth Street radio interview last week, and before the show, he's like, all right, I also want to get into some kind of World Series predictions. And I'm like, all right. So I sat down and tried to figure out how many players that are going to be next year and what are the factors in it. And I get on the show, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's not what he meant. He wanted to know who's going to win this year. And I'm like, I just totally forgot that was going on. I just didn't I mean, even in our universe, I don't think we got inundated with these 9 players and their backstories over the last couple of months, like perhaps, you know, the Dennis Phillip years or the Darwin Moon years.
Exactly.
And maybe it's because we just didn't have anybody that interesting. I mean, those two guys kind of stand out because they had different backstories, you know. I mean, I'm not saying that obviously Greg Wilson kicking drugs isn't a good story, but I mean it's not a, you know, a logger who won a tournament and with the Saints hat and is doing well, or a truck driver, you know it, and you can't control that, but for some reason this year I just didn't think there was that much of the buildup.
Well, I mean, it's the bud is off the rose or whatever the hell that saying is. I mean, in the beginning when it was new, that was what, you know, oh, this is exciting, this is new. Hey, what's going on? Oh, the World Series is waiting 3 months to do the final table. Oh, really? Why? Well, because they want to get to know the players. Oh, who are the players? You know, and now it's like, yeah, okay, they're doing it again. Oh, it's 9 24-year-olds who couldn't hack it in college because they were so smart that they, you know what I mean? It's almost, it's just like, okay, it's the same story every year now. And like you said, you can't control it. And yeah, there are some individual stories that are very good, which I, you know, the short stack came in and ended up lasting until three-handed, and he had gotten on his bike and got hit in an accident and almost died. And, you know, I mean, so there are all these different individual stories. The coaches had some interesting, you know, angles. You know, there were some coaches like, you know, Sylvia had Vanessa Selfs as his coach and so on. So, yeah, there are individual stories, but you're right. I mean, you and I are in the industry. We're pretty, whether we're doing recreational players or not. I mean, on our cover, if you looked at our covers over the last year, a lot of named pros or pretty big names are still on the cover because they're still winning our smaller local tournaments. So we are in the know, and we're a pretty big player in this situation, and we didn't really want to pay attention to this. What does that say?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm with you. I didn't forget when that it was that, but I didn't know the details. Like Gene said to me, hey, isn't the final, didn't you say it was at the end of October? And I'm like, yeah, it's coming up, but I can't remember if it's Monday and Tuesday. I couldn't remember if it was 9 o'clock. Before it was like, boom, Tuesday, 8 o'clock, I know I'm watching poker.
Right.
You know, now it's like, which day was it? Was it Monday and Tuesday? You know, so I didn't even know. And it's not just because we're so busy with the magazine and all the other things that we're doing now. It's that it's just not in, it's, you know, it's not ubiquitous anymore. It was when it first started. It was everything poker related somehow. We were getting emails and updates, and every magazine was talking about it. And now it's like, okay, we'll say who they were when they qualify, and then we'll preview it when it's the month of it, and that's it. You know, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the thing that I want to get back to what you said about having that little 2-hour show or whatever. That's every day, and that's a huge commitment that people would have to make. You know, whereas there are a lot of people who want to watch their Survivor on Wednesday, they want to watch their Big Bang on Thursday. They're not going to tape 2 hours of this and then watch, you know what I mean? They're just not going to. That's the hardcore stuff that you find online. So I think you get those daily updates and daily videos and daily hands reported to you on Poker News. Whereas ESPN, for them to commit, you know, they tried that with the live thing and they moved that to it, and people watch the live thing. A couple years ago, but they didn't do that this year because they knew the effort that it took to do that. So I don't know if a 2-hour show or an hour show, update show every single day during the 2.5-3 weeks of the World Series is worth it to them. And I don't know if people can invest that much time in watching poker.
Well,
I know they
did
it all at once.
We're talking about
the
same amount of programming is what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
just in a different style and a different time. So, you know, if there's people who are watching it just because they want to watch the hands play out, and there certainly are a lot of people that just want to watch hands, and I'm not trying to make them feel lesser for wanting to do that, but you know, I think what we're talking about is how to run the course and how do you get some people back in.
Yeah.
So I mean, it could just be hands, you know, with a little bit of analysis, a little Lon and Norm yucking it up a little bit, but. I don't know. I mean, I guess the other thing, too, is, I mean, should we compress this time? I mean, can you take a week off at the end, a month off at the end, and still get the benefit of creating some buildup without stretching it out for so long where people
forget
now or beginning to forget?
Yeah.
And maybe you fill in that time in the broadcast with the main event stuff, so you're still getting that buildup, and then, you know, do the live thing if you want. There's lots of ways to go about it, and I'm sure they've talked about this before, and I'm sure they're going to talk about it again, and we'll just see what happens next year.
But, overall, I mean, $8.5 million, it's still a huge story. That alone is a huge story, and, of course, the kid beat, you know, drugs, and so a lot of different angles, and congratulations to him. It was pretty good, you know, and again, the story itself was good. The television, maybe not so much, but and that's no fault to the commentators or any of that. They all... did their best to fill 13 hours of paint drying, so they did a great job. I just don't think that the entertainment itself was in the playing. It was more in the people and the talking, and I don't know if that's necessarily a good, you know, remedy for what's ailing this right now. But all right, we got a hotline. 813-448-1120. This comes from Mr. No Swag.
Hello, boys. Mr. No Swag here. First of all, congratulations on your new poker tour. Now, since you guys are knocking on the door of, full tilt poker side, I was thinking, since I've never taken any swag, how about I borrow some money from you guys to enter your tournament, and I promise that I will pay you back. Okay, great. Think it over. Let me know. Have a great day.
You know, the guy's got a sense of humor.
Yes, he does. Yeah, I'm not giving anybody any money to play in our events. I don't have enough money to put my own money in to play my own event, so I'm not going to have somebody else play in it.
But he doesn't want any swag, so, I mean, you save a little bit there.
That's true. That's
an
true.
An extra dollar that we don't have to give him a patch for, right?
He doesn't want swag, but he wants money. That's the smart man. That was one of our edicts for our business after the first year. We're like, all right, no more exchanging, you know, goods for ads. I mean, we need money. So maybe you should come work for us instead.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Yeah.
All right, well, Mr. No Swag, again, until you change your name, we're not going to send you anything. Actually, we have sent you something, but we're not going to send anything today. But everybody else, call the hotline at 813-448-1120, and we'll send you something wonderful like a T-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Antiup store at antiupstore.com.
We also have a mailbag this week from John Mooney. He says, in our home game, we started playing a game we call Six Card Hold'em. Everyone is dealt six cards, and you make three two-card hands before the flop, which can't change once they're set. Betting begins before the flop, and once the flop is out, you bet and then discard one of your two-card hands. After the turn, the same thing. Discard another two-card hand and play it out. Big pots with your hand values changing on every single street. Keep up the good work. And he's been listening since podcast one, he says.
Wow.
Man. Has John Mooney written in before? I don't remember.
He's not been on our swag shelf, so he might be part of our silent majority.
Yeah.
It's silent no more.
So what do you think of Six Card Hold'em? It's a lot like Tallahassee Poker, a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's a little stronger of a game, I think. Because you don't have everything turning on this wild card.
Right.
And there's some strategy here. It's not like you get six cards and you can play your best combination. You got to, before it's dealt, analyze your six cards and put them in three hands, which I think is very interesting. I mean, obviously you got pairs, you got to put pairs together, but and suited connectors, but what if you have some random cards? So there's some strategy involved there, and then obviously once the flop comes, you're going to pick the hand that has the best option, just kind of like Crazy Pineapple. But yeah, I mean, we know from playing Pineapple that sometimes it's very difficult to figure out which of those cards to throw away.
Yeah, I think that they're
the flop, and this, now you're talking about a whole hand, and you got to do it twice.
Yeah, I think you're going to have some Omaha strategy in here, because in Omaha, you don't have to throw them away, but you can only play two of them in your hand, so it's got some Omaha mentality to it. But yeah, throwing away cards twice, oh, that's so painful. There's another game we play like that, right? Is it the, what is it, 3-2-1 Omaha? Or no, there's one where you get
2-11, you mean?
Yeah, I don't know. There was one where you had to throw away cards twice. I can't remember which one it was.
Yeah.
And it's brutal. It is brutal to throw away cards twice, especially when that turn now helps the other hand that you didn't think you were going to play, and now you're like, uh-oh. You know,
think
sucks.
About this, too. I mean, there's a couple real advantages or real positives to this game, and I'm not suggesting it's going to take off, but, one of them is increasing pots.
Mm.
You know, you've got a lot of, now you've got three, you're really essentially playing three hands at once. So it lures a lot more people in. This is kind of the reason some of us like Omaha or Pineapple, because, you know, it encourages people to play action or give you action. So you get bigger pots. And then think about the strategy involved here. I mean, when you have six cards that are exposed in your hand, now you're able to refine a little bit on what your opponents might have.
Hmm.
You know, let's say you have all four aces in your hand, okay? On the surface, that's pretty crappy, right?
Right.
Because now you obviously you're not going to flop a set, and that, but you also know that no one else has an ace. So at that point, you could make you know some certain straights aren't going to work, or if there's a flush out there, they know they don't have the ace high flush, right. You know. So I mean, it does reward the person that pays attention to those details, I think.
Well, I wonder too, like if you had four aces, you're guaranteed to have at least one suited ace, maybe two, depending on what the other two cards are. So that's good. But what if you get dealt two aces double suited? What do you do? Do you split the aces and have two flush draws?
See, that's what I'm
or do
saying.
You keep
There's
the aces?
This is not a carnival game, in my opinion. This is a real legitimate game.
It's difficult. It definitely is difficult. I mean, I think I would split the aces because if I kept them together, the odds of me beating six cards out for every player there with just aces is very rare, but I have two shots at no flushes.
You're not going to be able to thin the field as well as you normally would, so I mean, that's the advantage of aces in a game is to kind of get heads up, and then you know the aces alone might win. I mean, here you know it's going to be shocking if not everybody's in to at least see the flop.
Yeah, especially if you're playing a limit.
Yeah, exactly. So at this point, I mean, the aces, I think, shrivel up. Particularly if you know you're not going to be able to flop a set with them, which you're not. So yeah, I think I'd probably do that. But I mean, that's kind of the stuff that goes into this. I mean, I find it a very academic game based off of the 3 minutes that we've been talking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be tough to write a book on this. That book would be like three times as thick as Super System, I think, before you got all the stuff you need to get out about it and stuff. But sounds very difficult. I don't know what the edge would be. Wow, I never even heard of that game. That's pretty cool. Six card Hold'em. At first I thought it was going to be like six cards on the board. I'm like, well, we've done that. That's Ocean, you know, or whatever. Wow, that's pretty cool.
A little bit more to it. All right, John. Well, we appreciate you emailing your great idea to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we encourage everyone else to do the same thing. And we're going to give you something great. We're going to give John a classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo, and definitely ask about the AntiUp logo version. And don't forget to use code AntiUp for free shipping on your orders.
All right, Call the Floor comes from Gary Lance. Says, we are playing in a home game tournament that tries to follow TDA rules as closely as possible. As the cards are being dealt, the player in the big blind calls out that the second card dealt to the small blind, which is me, was an ace. The big blind was the only player to notice anything odd about the dealt hand. No one noticed a card lifting when dealt. I had pulled my two cards together before the big blind announced the card, so it is unclear which card was the second dealt. I look down at the cards, and I see the 9 of hearts and 8 of hearts. I ask for the clock to be paused as I figure out what to do. The big blind is adamant that it was an ace, and eventually adds that it was a black ace. In the end, it is ruled a misdeal, and all cards are mucked, and I show both cards to the table. Was that the correct ruling? And does this additional information result in a penalty for the big blind player?
I love this question. All right, here's what Jody said. Per TDA rule number 31, misdeals, exposing the second card to any player is not cause for a misdeal, provided that is the only card exposed during the deal. And remind you, you can go to pokertda.com for more on this. It says, if you're playing in a situation where there is no official tournament director, you simply have to insist the other player tells you the suit of the ace or be quiet. Player puts you in a sticky spot. You shouldn't have had to declare to the table you don't have an ace and then play your hand with that disadvantage. The beauty of poker is that you can tailor the rules to your specific situation in pursuit of what's best for the game. Perhaps your group should have a specific penalty for the accuser in this situation. My suggestion would be two full rounds of the button away from the table. This is a tempest brewing here, and I have no idea what that saying means.
Well, what's scaring me, though, is what if he was legitimately thinking he saw an ace of clubs or whatever it was?
Well, that's what I'm saying. So now you set up the situation where you are penalized for saying something and end up being incorrectly. And if you don't say anything, you're technically violating the integrity of the game.
Yep.
Because if what you saw really was correct, now you have some information that other players don't have. And so it makes it a real tough situation.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way to win. I mean, if this guy said he was 100%, if this guy said he was 100% certain that it was a black ace, and it's not. He goes to the rail for two rounds or whatever, and in his mind he was certain he saw a black ace. Then now he's screwed because he was trying to be legit. Oh, I don't know.
See, I wonder if, and I haven't thought this through, so certainly shoot holes in my theory here. But what if you were just to say, "Hey, that card flashed. I saw it."
Hmm.
I mean, obviously, any solution here is going to be rife with some kind of angle shooting, right? But
yeah.
That seems to be the least there. So now you're not pointing out a card. So obviously, the player doesn't know, can't prove that you didn't see the card, because, I mean, obviously, in this situation, you look down, there's nothing even close to a black ace there. You just said, hey, that card flashed. Usually when this happens at a table, someone says, did anybody else see it? Yeah, and somebody else said it, and then they'll take it. You know, but at least I think at that point you're letting people know, hey, it flashed. I can't be certain what it is. I think it's something without saying it. And at that point, then you can just remove the card, maybe, and it doesn't cause as much consternation. Obviously, if you keep doing it, you know, if you, hey, I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think of what the problem with that is. I'm sure there is one.
That's a good point.
You know what I mean? Because in this situation, the problem is he clearly was wrong in what he saw.
Right.
And by saying what it is, as Jody said, it fouled our hero's hand here. Because now if he looks down and says, hey, I don't have an ace, now he's playing with a disadvantage because everybody knows he doesn't have an ace.
Yeah.
And, you know, if his hand is killed, then, you know, obviously we can't be just having people shouting out weird cards. You know, because think of this, if it's a missed deal, I mean, if I'm in the big blind, I got seven deuce, why don't I just say, hey, I saw your card. There's no penalty for me. Now I get a new set of cards in my big blind.
Mm.
That's the problem, I think, with this situation. I guess my solution doesn't really solve that necessarily.
Well, if it's only one card flashed, that rule, it says if one card is flashed, it's not a missed deal, as long as it's the only one. So then that wouldn't hurt your situation.
What I'm saying is the angle shoot here would be you're looking at your cards.
Right, but you said he would have to say that card flashed. Even if one card flashed, it's not a missed deal. They would give him another card and make that the burn.
Well, that's true. That's
so it's not a missed deal.
Yeah. So yeah.
So maybe that's a good. Although I mean, how do you even get word out about that? You know, I mean, how do you tell everybody?
We're getting the word out to Gary in his home game.
Yeah. No, I know. But I mean, within the TDA rules themselves. You know.
Well, I don't know how often this comes up. I mean, I guess Jody didn't really get into that necessarily. Is this something that happens? I mean, I can't say I've ever seen this happen before. It very likely could have.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't played 7 million hands like some people, but, you know, played it quite a bit. And I don't think I've seen this where someone says it's something and it turns into a situation like this certainly should have. So I mean, I guess the Gary and other home gamers out there, that's what I would say is, you know, tell the people if a card is exposed, not identify what the card is, just say that it flashed and replace the card.
Yeah, because if you see an eight of clubs, you know, or you think you saw an eight of clubs, in your mind you know that he has either an eight of clubs, a seven of clubs, or a nine of clubs, probably. So if it comes out all paint and you have two pair, you probably know that you're good. So there is some sort of edge to knowing what that card is without,
absolutely.
You know what I mean? So
that question.
So you need to say, okay, I can't be certain what it is, but it flashed and it's giving me a good idea of what it is, and I don't think that's fair. I don't think I should know that. No one else should know, but I don't want to call out the card and then be penalized because I'm wrong on what card it is.
Right.
But so that's a good idea. Maybe you do just say that and then make them turn the card over so everybody sees, everybody knows what it was.
Exactly.
Then he gets a card that no one can see, and then you move on. That's a pretty good. That's about as close as I think you can get without it becoming hairy.
Excellent. My job's done here. I'm Scott Long. We'll see you at the tables. All right, Gary. We appreciate you sending in your call to floor, and everybody else, remember to send your call to floors to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and Jody will do his best to answer them for you. And if he does, and we use for the show, we're going to send something great. Like, we're going to send the home game folks at Gary's game a deck of J Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Antiup. You can pick up your own decks in the Antiup store at antiupstore.com.
Remember a couple weeks ago when I was watching the World Series, back when it was entertaining?
I'm so wistful of the good old days.
And they interviewed a player who said that, you know, you can't get worse at poker, you can only get better. And And I said, I don't know. I know what he meant by that, but I wondered if you could get worse at poker, and I think we agreed you could. But a lot of people wanted to chime in on that. So we have a clip here from Donnie, and then we have another letter as well. So here's what Donnie has to say about that.
Yeah, this is Donnie. You guys were talking about whether or not you could become worse poker players, and I absolutely think that's possible. I think as we begin to understand more about the game, most of us at some point begin to think in terms of, if I do this, my opponent should do this, because that's the correct poker move. And as soon as we lose sight of what is my opponent likely to do, I think that we have become a worse poker player. I think that through the understanding that we gain by studying the game, we can actually become worse players of the game. So if you begin to catch yourself thinking, oh, he should have folded, then I think it's time that you start to re-examine the way that you view the game.
All right, help me with this a little. He says basically when we're wondering, if we lose sight of what our opponent is likely to do instead of what my opponent should do, we become worse. Is that what he's getting across here?
Yeah, I believe that's what he's getting across. And, you know, I think this is part of what I think we talked about when we first brought this up, is that when you first start playing poker, you really don't know what you're doing, right? You're just messing around, and you end up, whether it's just your perception or reality, you end up doing well because you don't know that what you're doing is not correct, right?
Right.
So then the more you learn, then you start to realize that you're making these mistakes and you shouldn't be. And so then you start playing better, and then you end up by that focus, end up feeling like you're playing worse. And I think what his point is here is that once we learn how to play poker, now we start focusing on our opponents and thinking that they should be playing at the same level we are. And I think it's just a reminder from him that they're not playing that way. So, you know, if you're looking across at a brand new player and you're assuming that they're going to do something because that's what you would do because you're an educated player now, and you lose sight of the fact that that player is not educated and probably is not going to do that, so you need to focus on what that player is going to do rather than what they should do, then you're causing yourself some problems.
But is he saying...
A long way of saying you got to know the player.
Yeah, but what is he saying that would contribute to your detriment to get to that point? That's the thing, is that, you know, when we're saying that you can't get worse and people are saying you can, or vice versa, what is it that contributed to you going from what my opponent likely would do to what my opponent should do? What is it that made you do that? And is there something that made you do that?
Yeah. But again, I think what he's talking about is not getting to that point, is being cognizant of not getting to that point. Because if you get to that point, that's where you become worse.
So
if you always focus on, you know, what is my opponent likely to do rather than what should my opponent do, then I think his hypothesis is you're not going to get worse. But when you let yourself slip away from that, that's when you start getting worse.
Okay. All right. Well, Carl,
I had no idea what people should have done, so.
Carl Lipinski writes in as well, and he says, definitely. He says, I started playing seriously in 96 when I first started playing 7-Card Stud in Atlantic City. I read all the books that were out there and kept reading and playing as the games turned to Texas Hold'em, then to crappy No Limit Hold'em. My game continued to improve throughout this period until I started my own business in 2006, and all my attention switched from poker to my business. I still play poker once a month, and I have really started to notice mistakes that I am making that I just didn't make 6 years ago. I am also relearning things that I scarcely remember learning at my height of poker playing, like stop and goes and floating, both I thought I invented till I read it in a book in another poker magazine. Yeah, I love that too. People always think, oh, that's a great play, and then they read about it later. I think I've done that with something before. But yeah, I do think, and both of these reactions here, I think the reasoning is time. I think the time and like, you know, just like anything else, you know, if you're a good bowler, if you don't bowl for 20 years, you're not going to show up and start averaging 250 again. You know, it takes time, and your skills deteriorate when you don't keep them sharp. So I think it's true that if you stay away from poker for a while, yeah, you definitely could get worse because you're not going to remember everything that you learned. And poker is obviously a skill. It's not a luck game. So that's another proof that it's a skill game, that, you know, what you forget will hurt you if you don't remember it again.
Yeah, and I wrote back to Carl, starting your own business, keeping poker players from playing poker for years. All right, we got a lot of housekeeping here. We got remember we had these this best poker quotes. This has been a lot of fun so far. You know, we had a reader write in and wanted to know what our favorite poker quotes are from anyone, real or fictional. And we're going to use the best on next week's show. And we're taping early next week. Taping. See, you always fall back on taping. We, yeah. We haven't taped ever, right?
No, just recorded.
Recording early next week. So by Tuesday, email them to us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. Post them on Annie Up's Facebook page or in the Annie Up forum at annieupmagazine.com/forum. And we'll use the best. We got a lot on Facebook so far. Of course, you know, half those people, more than half, did attribute the quotes. So.
Aww.
They're going to force me to do some research.
Don't forget, our inaugural Annie Up Poker Tour event will be at Thunder Valley Casino Resort in near Sacramento, California, November 19th to December 3rd. Scott will be on site November 23rd to the 22nd. More details, or 26th, right? I'm sorry.
Yes.
23rd to the 26th. More details on all AUPT events can be found at AnnieUpPokerTour.com.
And remember, I'm going to be at Dover Downs Hotel Casino at 7 p.m. on Friday, November 9th. That's the night before we set sail on our Annie Up cruise out of Baltimore. I'll be playing in the $100 buy-in, $10,000 guaranteed tournament there. I'll be bringing a pair of Blue Shark optics to give away to the person who knocks me out. Get there early because I'll be knocked out early, I'm sure. And you don't have to be on the cruise to come out and play. Just come out and have some fun. And I think Mike Young, our Mid-Atlantic ambassador, will be there too. So looking forward to having a good night.
Also, speaking of Dover Downs, they and Tampa Bay Downs are each hosting an Annie Up Poker League. Go to AnnieUpMagazine.com/leagues for all the details. And Jonathan Little will be the pro on our February 4th cruise out of Port Canaveral. Rates are only guaranteed through November 19th, and we're also sailing out of Miami, New York City, and Tampa next year. Get all the details, including how you can win your way on board at Dover Downs, Derby Lane, Tampa Bay Downs, and Daytona Beach Kennel Club at AnnieUpCruises.com. All right, Scott, I'm sure we're chock full of news this week, so what happened on the Annie Up News Desk?
The big one for the one drop, $1 million buy-in event for charity will return to the World Series of Poker in 2014, giving organizers 2 years to secure additional corporate sponsors. However, next year, the World Series will offer a $1,111. Is that right?
Yeah, $1,111 buy-in.
Why do they make it so confusing?
$1,111
buy-in. Little one for the one drop bracelet event that will allow unlimited re-entry over 2 starting days in an effort to greatly increase the prize pool and, of course, raise money for charity.
Wow, unlimited re-entry. So you is that even right? Is re-entry is like isn't it like the next day?
Well, I mean, you can re-enter that day.
That's
so
weird.
I mean, you could essentially start on day 1A. Get knocked out in the first hour and re-enter and get knocked out and re-enter and then come back the next day, continue to re-enter until you eventually are either knocked out or you move on.
So it's like a rebuy.
Essentially like a rebuy except you're not sitting at the same
table. Same table, you're moving. Okay.
And it's unlimited. You know, usually re-entry is limited to the one re-entry or something like that in most tournaments. So what they're trying to do is get, you know, if you have 1,500 people playing in this event, then trying to get it up to like 10,000 entries.
Man. Well, it's all for charity, so.
Well, it is for charity, and I wonder, I mean, again, you know, I hate to be the Grinch here, because I definitely support charitable poker, but do you think the fact that it's just this unlimited re-entry is going to be enough of a sales pitch for poker players to continue to fire bullets? When obviously, I don't know what the actual percentage of this buy-in goes to charity, but some of it will be, obviously, right? So,
right.
I just know how nitty poker players are. And I don't know whether the fact that there's prediction of massive prize pool is going to be enough to offset the fact that every time they fire another bullet, a portion of that's going to charity and coming right off the top.
Well, what I want is one of these millionaires to come in and say, oh, we're not having the millionaire? All right, I'm going to buy in 1,000 times.
1,000 times. I'm going to push every single down. All in.
I'm all in every single hand.
All in. They get their own personalized all-in button there.
In fact, I want the whole table to go all in. I'll rebuy you all back in 10 times, you know, or whatever. It's pretty funny. But, no, I know what you're saying. There are a lot of nits out there. And since it's re-entry and it's not rebuy, those chips are leaving your table anyway. So why does that encourage you to want to re-enter as many times as you can? Rebuy is different. You want to get as many chips on your table as you can if you think you can beat them. but a re-entry is totally different.
Well,
you lose that player.
Yeah, I mean, if you're assuming it's going to be a $1 million prize pool or $1 million first or some whatever ridiculous thing that could happen, then obviously, yeah, it's probably worth it at that point. I mean, because, again, think about a re-entry when you're out. It's just like analyzing the tournament before you entered the first time.
Yeah.
You know, if you still think that there's a good shot that you could win a big payday, then it's just like entering another tournament the following week. You're just entering it that day. So I can see that point. It's the charitable part of it that I'm interested to see whether it takes off. I hope it does. Obviously, you want to make a lot of money for charity. But.
We'll see. Okay, Full Tilt Poker has opened its site to all but U.S. players 1 week ahead of its scheduled launch of November 6th. Until then, players can only play on play money tables, but can check their real money balance. U.S. players will be permitted to play on the play money tables when the entire site is open on November 6th. You going back there, Scott?
No, I don't believe so.
Not yet.
Of course, I haven't played on PokerStars in months either, so, you know, it's
right.
Nothing against Full Tilt.
That's right.
You know, me and Carl, we got businesses to run. All right, finally, right here in the Tampa Bay area, state agents with masks and guns drawn, Chris.
I know.
Last month raided a free poker league. Let me repeat that. Free poker league. And arrested six people, charging them with running a gambling house. The Florida Division of Alcohol, Beverage, and Tobacco has released very few details on the raid, saying that the investigation remains active.
You know, I had come up with this, what I thought was a pretty brilliant analogy to show how crazy this is. And then I think someone else already did it. So so I think it was on our forum.
Is it called a stop and go? Or are you floating?
No, but I think someone did it on the forum. But it's the same thing. And I took the kids to Chuck E. Cheese a couple months ago. And I'm putting money in this thing to get tickets. I'm competing on the skee ball against something. And I get tickets for it. And then I take those tickets and I turn them in for Twizzlers. And I paid money for those tickets to get those tickets to get Twizzlers. And I was thinking of that. I'm like, you know, I pay for something and get something, and I'm competing. You know, I'm competing against the score itself because there's something set. So if I got zeros all the way around, I wouldn't get a ticket. So obviously there's some sort of, hey, there's skill to this. Hey, you're being honored for your skill and rewarded. And it's the same sort of thing. Now, whether these guys paid some sort of money for extra chips or whatever it is that they did, who knows? But really, how is this any different than something like that anyway? But and that's getting a little bit farther off the point, but really, I just can't believe that we can't spend our money on better things than guys giving $10 or $5 or whatever it is to get chips or something, you know?
Well, yeah, and I believe that was our good friend Gambit that was using that analogy.
Was it Gambit? Okay, I couldn't remember.
But, yeah, I mean, this has been my point from the beginning, and, you know, I've been kind of keeping my comments fairly tame until I know exactly what's going on, and, of course, the government is refusing to tell us exactly what's going on here, which is frustrating to me beyond belief. But yeah, that's what we're trying to figure out. Is this some kind of – were they doing something that they shouldn't have? And if that's the case, then, yeah, okay, you should know the laws, and you're going to get smacked on the tail for that. But or is this all of a sudden them deciding that, you know what, we've decided that free poker is not legal anymore and we're going to start raiding? And, you know, we heard just this morning that another league was told by a sheriff in a different county to cease operations. And so it does seem like now, after I made up my mind that this was about just one league, it's now about all leagues. And, you know, the point I made is, I mean, even the Chuck E. Cheese, which is a terrific example. But even think about your local trivia nights, or even, you know, it's Halloween now. If you went and a bar owner gives you $50 for the best Halloween costume,
yep,
it's all exactly the same thing. The only difference is we're playing with cards, and that gets people all freaked out.
Absolutely.
There's actually nothing different between playing a poker tournament where you don't buy in and you win a prize, or playing skee ball where you don't, where you actually buy in and win a prize. I mean, that's even worse, right?
Right.
Or going to a trivia game or something like that. You know, it's all the same. So it will be very interesting to see how this all shakes out. But regardless, I mean, you know, do we really need masks and guns drawn for... Put that chicken wing down! I mean, I really, you know, it boggles the mind.
Well, you know, they might have darts in there. You know, people might think to grab the darts out of the board and chuck them at the officer, so they need those guns to defend themselves, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, absolutely just sad. It really is sad. I mean, there's a reason why we have the Florida Division of Alcohol, Beverage, and Tobacco, and there's a reason why there are rules in place and everything, but really? I mean, really? Oh, my God. All right. Well, you know what? We can celebrate a perfectly legal O'Malley's move today. Let's get to hear the first part.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're seated at a $1-$2 PLO8 game. We're one of the better players at the table, and have one of the bigger stacks. We're in the small blind with $400, and it's early in the night. The under the gun calls. Under the gun plus one folds. The MPs one and two fold. Hijack calls. Cutoff calls. Button folds. And we look down at the ace of clubs, 10 of spades, 9 of hearts, 6 of spades. Yeah, not the greatest starting hand in the world for PLO 8. But with $9 already in the pot, we'll make the $1 call to see a flop. The big blind checks. Pot is $10, and the flop comes Jack of Clubs, 8 of Spades, 7 of Hearts. We flopped the nuts, and our first act. We want to punish any low draws that might be out there, and any random sets looking to boat up for cheap. We make it $8 to go. The big blind folds, but everybody else calls. The pot now stands at roughly $40, and the turn is the 4 of spades. That's not the greatest card in the world, but we still have the nut high and a low, though it's very, very weak. We lead out for $30. This time, the under-the-gun calls, leaving him about $500 behind, but the other players muck. The pot is nearing $100 as the river brings the 3 of spades. Ouch. We now have a 10 high flush and the fourth nut low. So we check, planning to check call a reasonable amount. Our opponent bets $64 into the $100 pot. So what do you think? Is this reasonable?
All right, Chris, the Annia Poker Tour isn't the only new poker tour to debut this year. The Hollywood Poker Open, the first event in a series created by Penn National Gaming for properties it owns and manages, will debut at Hollywood Casino Lawrenceburg this month. It finishes with a national championship event at the M Resort in Las Vegas in June and has several other events around the country in between. More information on the series can be found at HollywoodPokerOpen.com. But joining us today to tell us much more about the HPO is Randy Kiefer, poker manager at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races. Thanks for taking some time with us today. Randy. You already got me tongue-tied.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, well, we'll definitely explore all the details about the Hollywood Poker Open today before we let you go. But get us started. Just give us a brief overview of what it is and how it got started.
Well, the Hollywood Poker Open is a tournament series. We'll have several regional events leading up to a championship event that will take place next June 2013, at the M Resort in Las Vegas. And, you know, basically, whether you have, you know, one casino or many casinos, or one poker room or many poker rooms, at some point, you know, you have to make a decision to be in the poker business. And, you know, Penn National Gaming, with adding the properties that it's added, that has held large poker, that have large poker rooms, nice poker rooms, you know, it was time for us to, you know, have a tournament series of our own out there to satisfy our guests.
Well, you know, we've already mentioned that it's a regional, so there are larger qualifying events will be, you know, multi-week series, you know, kicking off with Lawrenceburg and then your room, which is north of Washington, D.C., but also in Columbus and St. Louis. These are some of your larger Penn National properties. Is that why they were chosen for the big events, or was there something more involved in that decision-making?
Yeah, no, they are larger properties, and they also have the significant-sized poker rooms, you know, with strong presence among local players in those particular markets. So, you know, they also have regional proximity, you know. I mean, they're all within either a short drive or a short flight, you know, so that we can have our players, you know, the regional events and stuff will take place at different times of the year. So selecting those locations, players will have an opportunity not only to play in one regional event, but very easily play in multiple regional events.
Yeah, sure. All right, so tell us a little bit what players can expect specifically at these regional series that you're putting together.
Well, the regional events, you know, you're looking at, you know, some larger buy-ins than you would normally see in regular tournaments, and of course, prize pools. I mean, that's what everybody goes to play poker tournaments for, is to get an opportunity to, you know, get good value on their dollar and have an opportunity to win a ton of money. I mean, that's why people play poker. So, you know, these regional events will run, you know, 7 to 14 days, depending on the market, and different types of buy-ins and different structures. And more important, the most important thing is lots of money to give away to the players.
Now, aside from these regional events, you're also giving players at smaller Penn National casinos, even the ones that don't even normally offer poker, a chance to win their way to the national championship. Tell us about those opportunities, if you can.
Well, what we're trying to do is we want to get everybody, you know, poker is everywhere. It doesn't matter what state, what city, what town you go into, quite frankly, whether they have casinos or not, there's poker being played everywhere in this country. And so, you know, some of our markets don't currently have table games and or poker. But there are poker players in those areas. So we just want to make sure that we're giving, you know, everybody, you know, an opportunity to have a chance to come play at the championship event in Las Vegas next June and have a chance at winning the, you know, a guaranteed prize pool of at least $500,000.
Well, excellent. Well, you just mentioned the national championship. It's going to be at the M Resort in Las Vegas, a gorgeous property south of the Strip. I know when I took my wife there the first time, she was really impressed, and certainly when I dragged Chris down there, he was too. This is going to happen while the World Series of Poker and several other tournament series are in town. It's a $2,500 buy-in event with a $500,000 guarantee, I believe. And obviously you'll be announcing more details about in the future, but right now, what can you tell us about it?
Well, you summed it up quite a bit right there. I mean, it's a $2,500 buy-in with a $500,000 guarantee. It's a three-day event. It's going to kick off on Friday, run over the weekend, June 28th through 30th, taking place at the M, which is a very beautiful property. And it's going to give us, again, an opportunity to introduce our players around the country to our property at, you know, the M in Vegas and experience the Vegas, atmosphere, if you will. It's during the same time as the World Series and a lot of other events, as you mentioned, there's more poker players in Las Vegas in that time frame than just about anywhere else, probably on the planet. And so... Yeah. It's an opportunity for us to, you know, again, bring our players from around the country together, but also have an opportunity for players that are already there to come and check out the Hollywood Poker Open and the championship event.
So is this something where your regional managers will sort of like be an escort with your players and you're all going to go out there and make sure this event is real successful? Or is it just, all right, you guys won, you're going out there, have a good time, tell us how it was. How's that going to work out?
Well, we don't have regional managers. I know what you're saying. You're saying the managers of the rooms.
Oh, the regional events. Yeah, exactly.
Right, exactly. Well, all the managers won't be out there. I myself will be out there. All the players will, receive when they win their seats. They'll be instructed on how they're going to, you know, how that's going to work. We'll obviously have the, you know, the list waiting at the end for the players. So when they come in, they show up, they want a seat. You know, they'll get into the tournament. So it'll be a very smooth process for them. We have, you know, the M's going to have some room rates for those players that win those seats. They're going to win. What we're doing is a lot of our properties outside of our regional events, you mentioned earlier that all of our properties are going to be putting together smaller tournaments, satellites, promotions, if you will, to send as many players that want to go to Las Vegas, to Las Vegas to play a championship event. Well, we're putting together packages for them, so they're not only going to win a seat, but we're going to include travel. So it's like a weekend vacation for these players from all over the country that are going to get to go to Vegas for the weekend, stay at the M, play in a huge poker tournament with a guaranteed prize pool of $500,000.
Cool.
Wow.
Well, you know, we haven't even hosted your first HPO event yet, but if you were to gaze into your crystal ball a little bit, you know, what are you hoping this series looks like in a few years?
Well, we're looking at to be one of the best poker, you know, tournament series in the country. I mean, we have a lot of properties, and we're going to continue to grow this and work on it and add some new and different features as we move forward that will continue to draw, you know, local and national recognition on the things we're doing. So I see a regional event every month in different areas of the country leading up to a championship event that you may continue to be at the M or somewhere else, but the overall, as far as the brand goes, the Hollywood Poker Open I see in a couple years is being, like I said, one of the best tournament series in the country.
Excellent. Well, you know, Penn National, you mentioned this, Penn National has been very aggressive recently in opening new properties, especially ones with large poker rooms, Kansas City, Toledo, Columbus. Is this a strategic effort on the company's part to raise its poker profile, or are we just because they're putting together some really great properties that you feel a need to have poker in them?
No, absolutely. We're looking to grow the Hollywood brand in the poker community. We know poker players, obviously, you know, they love to play poker, but they play about other games. They play table games. They play slots. They bring friends with them. They eat while they're on property, you know. It's important that we take care of our current, you know, players and our guests, but also, you know, open up opportunities for new players and guests. And so we're definitely looking to grow the Hollywood brand in the poker community.
Okay, so you brought up the Hollywood brand, and I know you're hoping that players will travel from regional to regional as well. Is there sort of a consistent theme that they can expect when they visit these different Hollywood poker rooms?
Well, I mean, all the Hollywood properties themselves are themed similarly today. However, in addition to that, we are beginning to, you know, we're in the early process at this point, but we are beginning to brand our poker rooms, and we'll, as we move forward, there'll be even more branding of the poker rooms with the HPO. So you'll begin to see layouts and chair backings and posters and different things that will be consistent throughout the rooms as we move this thing forward.
Cool.
All right, Randy, we definitely don't want to let you go before you tell us a little bit more about your property up in Charlestown, which is the closest poker room to Washington, D.C. It's been doing phenomenal business ever since it opened. Tell us a little bit about the room and why it's been so successful.
Well, I mean, we have 50 tables here. We spread all different levels, limits, types of games, hold'em, Omaha, stud, if you will. You know, obviously, base, whatever the players ask, we put them on the list. You can eat at the table. We run tournaments almost every day. You know, we have jackpots. We run promotions throughout the month as well as weekly promotions. I think the biggest thing that always, you know, it's about, you know, fun and fair, you know, make sure everybody's having a good time and make sure that everybody's being treated the same way. Consistency, making sure our staff is trained well so that when there is a situation on a game, it's being handled the same way. That's always, I've been in the business roughly 15 years, and, you know, from my experience, what players want to do is they want to come in, they want to have a clean, comfortable atmosphere, an opportunity to eat while they're here. And we have several places that offer great food here, and we provide those services. So the market is awesome. On top of it, we're close to a DC, like you mentioned, and right here in the, within a few short miles of several states. Ultimately, it's the team, the staff, the customer service that we provide, and the games and tournaments and promotions that we offer that keep the players coming back and having a great time.
Well, excellent. Thanks again for joining us, Randy. And before you go, reminder listeners one more time where they can go to get more information on the Hollywood Poker Open.
They can go to www.hollywoodpokeropen.com. They can go facebook.com, obviously, /Hollywood Poker Open, and follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/HWPokerOpen.
Excellent. Best of luck with this, Randy.
Hey, I really appreciate you guys having me on.
Thanks for coming on.
This is Joe Navarro, and you're listening to the best poker cast in all the universe, Ante Up, the absolute best on poker.
All right, Chris, we asked for people to send us hands of the week, and they obliged.
See what happens when you beg?
We have listeners. I'm so excited. But no, we appreciate everybody that sent us hands of the week. We've got enough to get through the rest of the year, but that doesn't mean you should stop.
Tell you, this inspires me to like want to go down to the corner with a little cardboard sign and ask for money.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, begging works.
But no, we got plenty of hands, but continue to send them to podcast@andyupmagazine.com because your hand could be better than the hands we already have.
That's right.
And we're all about better here, so... We don't play favorites. All right, but one of the first ones we got this week, and it's an interesting one. It comes from Paul Loop is his name, and he played in a little tournament called the World Series of Poker Seniors Event.
Ah.
Absolutely. He made a decision between playing a couple events in his local casino or going out to the World Series, and he's like, you know what? I need to make this big score, and I want to play in what he calls the quote-unquote geezers event.
We didn't call it that.
Yeah. No, he did.
He did. So, of course, you know, according to Mississippi, I'm a geezer. So
that's correct.
And you are now too, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah,
yes.
So we're both geezers, according to Mississippi.
All right, so remember, this is that record opening day of 4128 entries, so
right.
A bunch of times. But he actually said, before we get ahead, this is always interesting, he said, it would have been at least 4,129, except one guy at my first table, before the first card was dealt, was informed by the floor to come with them for a refund because it was discovered belatedly he was not 50 years of age. Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is a big operation, so things happen. But, I mean, you got to give your Players Club card and your ID.
Yeah.
Get in these vents, don't you?
Yeah.
Did somebody just not carry the one and the subtraction of the age there?
Well, you know, the show's already long and everything. The show's long already. I don't want to add too much to it. But I remember once a friend of mine, I was like 17, and they asked me to sub for one of their players in a bowling league. Because the player was sick or something. And, you know, as everybody on the show knows, I was a pretty decent bowler when I was younger. So I went on at their team, and I bowled phenomenally that night, and I won all their points for them, basically. So when the night was over, they're like, oh, man, we're going to take you out. And I'm like, no, dude, I'm not old enough to drink. Oh, no, don't worry about it. I know the bouncer. We're, you know. So we get to the place, and the bouncer that he knows isn't there. So they're like, don't worry about it. We'll get you by. So we get there, the bouncer takes everyone's ID, takes mine, and he was like a big football player. You could tell he's a big football player. And he looks at my ID, and you could just see the look on his face. Like, he's trying to do the math, because who would go up there 2 years shy of their, you know, and he's like, you're not 18. And I'm like, no. And he's like, you need to be 18 to get in here. But it took him like 20 minutes to figure it out. And you can just see the contortion on his face. So I wonder if that's what happened here. You know, they didn't even look at the numbers. They're just thinking, who would want to try to get into a senior event and not be 50 or, I don't know. But that's pretty funny.
Wow.
No, that's the other thing too. Like, you can play in the women's event as a man, but you can't play in the senior event as a youngster. Come on.
Yes, exactly. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Selective enforcement going on in lots of places these days.
They should have taken that guy down with masks and guns.
All right, let's get to the hand here. He said this hand happened in level 9. Blinds are 300 and 600 with a 75 ante. And he reminds us that he always started with 3,000 in units. So at this point, 3,200 players plus are already gone.
Wow.
By this level, including Freddie Deeb, who is adjacent at an adjacent table to us. So he outlasted Freddie Deeb.
Hey, there's a pat on the back right there. Obvious brag.
So our hero had been shuffled to his fourth table today, but that's frustrating too, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're playing in the World Series for probably, I don't know if he said the first time, but he obviously made a big deal, and now he's on his fourth table in the 9 levels. He'd been out there for 2 orbits, so at this point, we really don't know much about our opponents, is the reason for the setup here. So we have 8,500. We are dealt queen-queen.
Okay.
And we are under the gun.
Okay. With the antes out there,
and I'll give you a little bit more information. I'm sorry, I skipped over. He says, obviously, we don't know these players very well because we only made a 2 orbits, but he did remember looking around the table, and only a couple players at the table had more chips.
Okay.
Than he did. All right, so we're one of the ship leaders at the table, I guess, is the bottom line.
All right, well, normally, you know, without the antes, you make the 3x, you make it 18, but now there's 75 and antes out there too, so the pot's even bigger. You got another 750 out there, or maybe, I don't know, they 9-handed in the World Series. I can't remember. Maybe I think they're 10-handed though, right? So
I would assume, yeah. Okay. I don't know. Actually, I don't know. Yeah.
So I think that, you know, so pre-flop it's what, 1575.
1575 in the pot.
Okay, so I'm thinking, yeah,
8500.
I'll make it 1900.
You're gonna make it 19.
Yeah, 19. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Okay.
It's certainly defensible.
Okay.
I'm wondering. Here's the thing: when you bet 1900, if you get called, what happens now?
3,800 Morgues into the pot.
Exactly. No. I mean, 1,900 is a fourth of your stack.
Hmm.
I guess is what I'm getting at here.
Are you thinking we should shove?
I'm not thinking. I'm not saying we should shove, but I'm thinking we should consider maybe. Because here's the thing: if we shove and everybody folds, I mean, you want to get as much value out of your hands. That's what it's about, right?
Mm.
And queen's a good strong hand. So I don't want to minimize the value here, but if we shove and everybody folds, we pick up 1575, right?
Mm.
That's more than 10% of our stack, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Is there not at least a consideration that is a good enough outcome? And if we get called, obviously that's fine. I mean, you know, only two hands have us beat preflop. And then we could double up at that point. Maybe people are going to be thinking that we're overshoving with a small pair. Again, remember, I mean, this is a World Series, but it's a seniors event. There's 4,000 people here. We know, you know, 3,000 of these people are at best recreational players, right?
Right.
So I'm not trying to do too much second level thinking here. This is not like, you know, the $25,000 buy-in Bellagio event, right?
Right.
And so I think it's possible that someone might think that we're just trying to steal here with the sixes, a hand that we don't want to see a flop with, and maybe give us some action. So there's that benefit as well, too.
You're absolutely right.
My concern with a 2,000 or something like that is, I don't necessarily think we're committing ourselves to the hand, but we're putting a big chunk of our stack in there. We're probably going to have to make a C bet, and when we make that C bet, at that point we are committing our hand. So at that point, we're probably going to have to shove, either check or shove on the flop, right?
Well, let's see.
And that gets dicey. If it's an ace or king, maybe we give up, and then we lost a big chunk of our stack. And if it's less than that, we're going to shove, and if someone got lucky, then we're out. But I'm not saying that's a bad idea either. But at this point, you know, this is kind of the problem, I think, in general with the World Series structures, is you don't get a lot of chips.
Well, if it's 10-handed, right, our M, if it's 10-handed, that's 1650 every time around. Is that correct? Because it's, you pay the small and the big, and then there's 10 hands, so you're paying 1650. If you have 8,500 and you're paying 1650 every round, then your M is about 5. It's like 5.1 or 5.1.5. So you're probably right. You probably are in that range where shoving isn't a bad idea. I mean, a lot of people only go with 10 big blinds, and we clearly have more than 10 big blinds here. So you
have
to, but
14 big blinds, and you're right, there's entities too. So the M is a little bit more of an important factor.
So I think the M now is more refining of this, and I think maybe an M of 5 is right around where they would say you have to shove. So I'm thinking you're probably right. Maybe I retract my raise and think that, you know, I would just shove. And then, well, you know what? You cut the blinds. It's a big collection of blinds. Like you said, the blinds and annies, that contributes a lot to your stack.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know really what the rule is, but I've always thought that, you know, if you can increase your hand by your stack by 10% during a hand, that's a good outcome.
Absolutely, because the converse of that is they say, you know, you don't want to risk any more than 10% with a raise or a call or whatever or something like that. So very similar situation. So yeah, increasing by 10%, that's great.
Yeah, and then so then you go, I mean, really you go to a little bit less than 17 big blinds. So it's not drastic, obviously, but eventually that's going to matter.
And it buys you another whole round for free.
Yeah,
if they all fold.
Yeah, exactly. And then we think we're one of the bigger stacks. So, I mean, we'll put some pressure on there. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, this is one of the things that I've been starting to work on my own game a little bit. Because obviously, you know, one of my leaks, as everybody knows, is I end up getting short stacked and I wait too long to make moves. And, you know, I always used to think it was that 10x big blind before you start shoving. And I'm starting to think that I need to start shoving around 15 big blinds now. According to the situation, obviously here at Queens, that's great hand. You know, I'm not talking necessarily about shoving with seven deuce on the button when it's folded around with 15 big blinds. But you know, I need to pick up those chips when I can. So
there is the argument for, hey, you're only going to see a hand like this. You know, it's a huge hand. Exactly. You know, only two hands beat you, and you want to get money for them. And if you shove, you're going to scare everybody because you're one of the bigger stacks. Even though it's only an MO5, it's still considered a bigger stack at this table. Absolutely. So there is that. You want to get value for your hand, and you think if you shove, you're only going to pick up the blinds and the annies, which you could do with any two cards. You know, unless you're only going to get called by a better hand. You know, so there is that argument for making the raise. So let's just assume we don't shove, because if we shove, the hand's over for us. So let's assume we make it 1900.
All right, well, our hero says, my thinking was that with the blinds and annies so high and going to 400, 800 with 100 ante in 15 minutes or so, that I couldn't afford to ship from under the gun and fold everyone out just collecting the blinds of antes of 1575.
Okay, so
obviously, I disagree.
So his table must not be full either. 1575 is less than 1650, which is what it would be if it was 10-handed. So.
Yeah.
I disagree, I think. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think shoving is not a bad play. If you have somebody who's short, you might get called, and they're going to think they have two live cards when they really don't. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think both ways work, but, I mean, I wouldn't mind a raise here. But if I hit any of it, or if I have all unders, I'm shoving on the flop.
Right. All right, well, our hero decides to min-raise to 1,200, hoping that someone would 3-bet or ship, and I could ship my queen-queen.
Yeah, I don't like that move at all.
At all?
Nah, not even a little bit. That's like completely in between what...
Well, here's the thing. I mean, that... again, I'm not defending it. I'm shoving here. But,
right.
But at least in his mind, he's trying to get his chips all in here. He's just trying to bait the hook a little bit and try to get somebody else to make that raise so he can collect a little bit more dead money than the 1575. That I can see. I mean, it's kind of a borderline when we were talking. I mean, I had to kind of talk you into it because it's 1575, but if there's 5,000 in the pot, you're obviously going to shove, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of its attempt here. And then the min raise doesn't necessarily commit us to this hand, right?
Well, I don't know if it...
If we get called, I mean, well, let's see, 1,200, so, I mean, 73, I mean, if it comes an ace or king, at that point, I'm not saying you want to play that tight, but you could fold here, but if you made the 3X up to 1,900, 2,000, like we're talking about, it's much tougher at that point, I think.
Well, I like the impression you're giving when you make it 1,900 or 2,000, because then they're saying they know you can't fold, so they can't push you off the hand. 1,200 might give you the impression, too, that you're a nit. I don't know. The thing about the 1,200 to me is that it just allows way too many people to get an unbelievable price on their money to come in with any two cards and either outflop you or hit a draw and for a small price. You know, if I'm in the big blind with 600 and there's 27, almost 2,800 out there, and I only have to call 600 to get 4.5 on my money to try to bust somebody in this event at the level 9, I think I'm going to do it. And I might do it at the small blind. I might do it at the button. You know, I just feel like you're not putting any pressure on anyone. And I know you want to get it in with queens, but what happens when you get it all in and it's 3 hearts and you don't have a heart in your hand? Or it's ace-king, 7 of hearts, and you have queens, and now what do you do? How do you feel about shoving in your last, 6,300 or whatever? You know, you're not, you know, and then you get away from it. Well, now your M is like 3, and you don't even have 10 big blinds anymore. I just feel like you need to either shove or make a big enough raise that guys can't come in for a great price on their money. It's, especially at this level of the tournament, and you're trying to, you know, you're trying to survive to the money because it sounds like you need to last another 500 players or so. I just don't like that min raise.
Excellent. All right. Well, he says, but even that raise folded around everyone but to the button, who was stacking chips from the previous hand and threw out 600, not realizing it was raised. When he found out the pot was raised, he just called the raise, and the big blind threw in 600 more, and he said, why not, with the size of the pot bloated by an uncertain button, which was your point, right?
Yeah, well, even the button, take the button out, I still think you're still getting a ton on your money if you were just the lone caller in the big blind. 600 to win 2,800, you know, I'm doing that every day and twice on Sunday. With any two cards, really. If they're remotely decent, I'm doing it.
All right, well, the flop comes queen 9-7. He doesn't give the suits here, but obviously that's a pretty good flop for us. And we are at 7,300, and the pot is at 4,600. And the big blind donk bets into me for 600.
All right, I'm shoving. And here's why. I realized that when that first flop came out, everyone's like, oh no, you got to get value for your hand because now you've got top set and the nuts and you need to try to extract. But this guy bet into us, and he bet into us knowing we raised preflop. So my hope is that if he's on a draw and doing that, I might get him to fold. If he's got a set and he's doing that to see if we have aces or kings, he's never going to get away from that hand, and now we've got him drawing the one out. So,
and even aces and kings could do this.
Yeah, and even somebody with aces and kings, which you know, wouldn't have, I think in the big blind he would have re-raised with aces or kings, but if he didn't.
It's tricky. But at this point, we want to get the money in now.
Yeah, we want to get the, I would think shoving. I'll take the 600 plus the bigger pot. That's what's the pot now?
Well, it's 4,600 plus that, so it's 5,200 now.
Yeah.
This pot.
So I'm definitely
we only have 7,300, so we're only just a little bit above the pot anyhow. So
yeah.
If we make any bet here, you know, I don't. I mean, I guess you could talk about trying to string this guy along and maybe get another bet on the next street.
The thing that scares me is if I just called, a very likely calling hand in that big blind is Jack 10. You know, maybe 10-8 or 8. I don't know if 8-6 would call me.
Well, certainly. I mean, when you donk bet, that's a lot. That's, you know, he's trying to set the price.
Yeah, exactly. Know? For a draw.
I get my free card at. My free card's not going to be free, but it's going to be.
My price.
Very cheap. It's going to be 600, and maybe this guy's going to be confused by it. And go, what does he have? Does he have a set? And he's trying to lure me in and not raise. And you're right. Now I got to get one more shot at this completing my straight at 600 rather than for my all my chips, which is probably what's going to happen.
Yep, I'm shoving.
All right, now he says, it's my judgment that the button will probably not have a threatening hand, and the big blind will fold any raise with this board. His bet looks like a blocking bet of sorts. Holding the nuts, I decide to take the weaker line of calling the big blind of 600, and the button folds.
See, now that's the other thing, too, is that you want to get that button out, and he did fold, but he might not have for 600. There's so much money out there, he's getting like 100,000 to 1 on his money. What if he had the draw? You know, what if one of them had the draw and one of them had a pair of nines? Or one of them had a draw and one of them had a set of nines or set of sevens? So you really want to get your money in with the nuts here and not let somebody eke out a draw with minimal, you know, money invested. $600 or units, I mean, that's nothing.
Yeah. I mean, to increase my stack by 52 here, I mean...
That's more than 50%.
That's what I'm looking for. And if I get the guy to call... Even better, because obviously we have the nuts right now, and I'll take that call every day. But I'm quite happy. I mean, I was happy taking the 1575.
Yeah.
Now that it's up to 5,200, absolutely.
Yeah, that's like 68-70% of your money, of your starting stack when you started the hand. That's huge. It's almost like doubling up.
Yeah, it's completely different if we're playing a really deep stack tournament here, and everybody's got like 100 big blinds in front of them or something like that.
Right.
Then obviously, yeah, then this... line that we're doing is exactly what you want to do because you're willing to take the risk because you're hoping to get a lot bigger payday. But here we have a limited amount of payday left here.
Yeah. So plus, you know, you would have taken a whole different line preflop too. You know, you would have definitely made the full raise and whatever and gotten respect for the hands and stuff instead of the min raise. So there's a whole different way you would have played it anyway. I agree. I think we need to get it all in now all we can.
All right. Well, the turn is a 6. So that puts 2 suited cards and obviously another card towards a straight. Oof. The pot is 5,800 and we are now at 6,700. The big blind bets 2,400 this time.
Oh man. See,
and now... before you say it, I'll give you a little. He says, how does this happen? What does he have?
I feel like now that he's bet that much.
Pretty substantial increase in his wager.
Yeah, he either has a set or he has 8-10. Because or he could have 8-5, but I don't think he played 8-5. But he could have 8-10 or a set now, and either we're losing or we're winning. There's no in between here. There's no like, I mean, we're way behind or we're way ahead. I mean, we're not like it's brutal. It feels like he's. It feels like he's made a hand rather than already had a hand.
The fact that it's 4x more for the last bet. The first time, again, our analysis on the first bet was that he was trying to set his price.
Yeah.
It seems illogical to me that he's playing 10-8 here, but he only had to call one more bet on that, and it could be suited, which makes it 100,000 times better. Not really. So it's a little illogical to me that that's what he has, but, you know, we thought he was going for a straight, and now he's betting four. He's definitely not betting this with Jack 10 now.
Man.
So he either has a set or he has a straight, and we're 50-50, and, you know, if he had the set on the flop, then we would have got it all in, and we would have got a stack, and now if he has on the draw, we would have probably pushed him off the draw.
Yep.
Now we're in a tough situation.
Man. Well, you got 10 outs if you decide to shove, you know, the board compare. So I can't get away from a set of queens in this situation, given how much I have left in my stack anyway. You know, I don't think that, you know, you have 6,700, and I'm not going to call 2,400. I'm going to have to shove. But I wouldn't have been in this predicament. There's just no way. I would have gotten it all in pre-flop, or had I made that raise, I would have gotten it all in on the flop. So it's tough to play this hand properly now at this point. But to me, I can't just call. I either have to shove or fold. If I believe the guy really has a straight, I still have 10 outs, too. You know, that's still a 25% chance to make my hand. Am I getting 4-1 on my money or whatever it is? I don't know. This makes me sick. This hand makes me sick. I definitely wouldn't have played it this way.
All right. So he said, given the line I have taken, he could have just draws or something fairly strong like lower sets, two pairs, etc. A lot of hands I can beat and a couple that will draw out on me and one that has already chased me down. Drawing thin but not drawing dead, even in the worst case. However, in the heat of the moment, I punt. Inexplicably, I just called a raise, just hoping for the best, as I guess is all it amounted to.
Oh, he didn't punt, because punt is giving up and handing the ball back to them, so he fumbled.
Fumbled.
That's what he did. I definitely would not call that bet.
Well, here's the thing, is I can almost... I could defend this if I had to. You know, if he really did have Jack 8, you know, why commit our entire stack here?
Not
we're
going to
get it all in anyhow in the river, right?
Yeah.
So if we really think that he has 10-8, there's no reason to put it all in here. Let's put it in at a price that doesn't eliminate us from the tournament. And if we boat on the river, then woof, we can get it in there, not worrying about it, right? I don't think there's any... The guy's not going to fold for our all in here. So, again, to me... At this point, I mean, calling is probably the best thing to do. I mean, we can't put him on a draw still right now with that bet, right? So his hand is what it is. And if the board improves, although I guess for a flush, if the board improves, it's going to improve more for us than him.
Hmm. Oh, if you're convinced he has the straight...
Essentially, you're going to get it all in on the river anyhow, I guess. But it leaves you that option of the last minute deciding, you know what? I'm going to save this extra $2,000 and try to do something else.
I can't call. Then you're just going back to your same avoiding. You're not avoiding your short stack crap again. Now you're going back into your I can survive with a short stack. If I called and I believe this guy already had it straight, I'm calling hoping to hit one of 10 cards because I can't call all in on the end. If I can call all in on the end, why wouldn't I shove all in now? So
well, here's the thing. The difference is if you are in an airplane that's going down, right?
Right.
And you have no parachute, do you jump out of the plane? Because, you know, maybe I'll land on a tree or a trampoline. Or do I wait until the last possible minute and maybe somebody will rescue me? That's exactly what's going on here.
Well, not exactly. That's not exactly what's going on here, because if you fold, if you fold, you have 6,700. If you call and then fold, you don't. You have 4,300. So, to me, I would rather be on the plane where the parachute is, and the parachute's not hooked up, and you have to figure out a way to make the parachute work before you jump out of the plane, rather than...
So, I mean, but your argument's between... folding and shoving.
Which is what I said. I can't do one of the... I can only do one or the other. I can't call. I don't think you can call here. You have to fold or shove here. If you're calling, you're going to have 4,300 left. and we know what that M is. It's like 1.5 or something.
Okay, but if you shove here, do you really think this guy's going to fold?
If he doesn't have a straight, he might, yeah.
All right, do you really think that's possible when you just put 3,000 in on two barrels?
If he has a straight, why am I calling? I'm folding. If I'm positive he has a straight, there's no way I'm calling.
But
it's not like it's a small bet.
You're determining that he has a straight. What we're saying at this point is we don't really know. All in does absolutely nothing here to me.
Calling is a huge mistake.
To force somebody to fold, so you win two different ways. He's not going to fold here. He's going to call. And at that point, we're just throwing chips in, hoping that we're lucky or we're going to catch up.
Well,
I think
he can't fold if we shove. I don't necessarily agree with that. And the only hand, if you're positive he has a straight, he can't call. If you're not positive, then you have to shove or fold. I can't call here. I can't have 4,300 left. I can't call with almost 30% of my stack, knowing this guy likely has me beat or not. You know what I mean? I just have to go or not. I can't just call here. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, that's the difference between you and me.
I know, but that's what's going to get you to a short stack again.
Right, but I'll still be in the tournament, and you'll be out if you're wrong.
Or I'll be doubled up and can win a tournament.
That's true. Absolutely.
And you'll get a min cash.
But again, once you're out, you're out. And that is the point I keep making to people. Once you're out, you're out.
I understand that. But you're essentially out with 4,300.
Essentially out is not out.
That's true.
Have you heard of this chip in the chair story?
I live that chip in the chair story, buddy.
I'm not afraid. I mean, I used to be afraid of shoving and stuff like that. I'm not afraid of shoving anymore. What I'm afraid of is just willy-nilly going out of a tournament because I don't want to play with a short stack. Oh, I can't play with a short stack. That's ridiculous. I can't play with a short stack. I'd rather be out than play with a short stack. That's ridiculous in my mind. It's absolutely beyond ridiculous.
Oh, my God.
That's the difference here, but... But again, I would have shoved preflop here.
I know, exactly. The thing is, though, 4,300, your M
really
is like 2.5.
I'm sorry, he just put 3,000 in on two streets. He put 2,400 on this street. He has a hand.
I know.
He has a hand.
Here's the deal. It doesn't even matter if you can beat the hand. If you can't beat the hand, you have to fold.
All right, well, fold, yeah, but don't go all in.
Well, it's one or the other. I can't call.
Why go all in? That's ridiculous.
I can't. I don't think going all in is ridiculous. It's only ridiculous if you know he has a straight and you have to hit those outs.
You just said if you know he has a straight.
Right. If you know he has a straight, you have to fold.
Hi, Mr. Butcher. I'm here ready to be slaughtered.
If you know he has a straight, you have to fold. You were saying that you knew he had a straight and you would call hoping to hit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could. Why not?
Why not? Oh, my God. Why not? Okay, let me risk 30% more or whatever I have left, hoping to hit 10 outs.
All right, we're at 4,300 right now, right?
If we call.
No, this... Oh, yeah, that's right. No, it's not going to be getting hands, 4,300. Or no.
No.
Okay, no, 6,700.
After the turn, it was we had 6,700.
6,700. All right, so that's 11 big blinds, right?
Hmm.
Although it's getting close to turning the 800, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Or going up. So if we call here... That's 4,300 divided by 600. That's 7 big blinds.
Right, but an M of 2.6.
Well, yeah, but our M stocks either way.
Well, if you had 6,700, your M is almost
so
5.
Just putting at this point, I mean, you're really just... You're going to be... you're going to get it in on luck anyhow. At this point, we've got a set. It could be good, and we could boat up. So why would you not want to take that shot?
So you're saying then if you call and then the river is a blank and he bets the rest of his chips, you fold.
You have the option of folding. I'm not saying I will, but you leave the option open of being able to get away from this hand. If you go all in right now, you take that option away from you. For no earthly good, because he's not going to fold. Now, obviously, we have some kind of read on this guy and we think that he makes this kind of bet all the time and he might fold, and that's a different story. But I just... Knowing what we know about him and a general player, this guy is not going to fold. So going all in is just throwing that into the pot. I mean, very likely I'm still going to throw that in on the river anyhow and just hope that I got lucky and that he doesn't have anything. But at least I have that option. If, you know, maybe I pick up river. I don't know. but putting it all in now, you're taking that complete option away from you. And I don't know why players insist on taking options away from themselves.
I would just fold. I wouldn't.
Absolutely.
That's fine. If I'm convinced. If I'm not convinced, I'm going to shove because I'm not convinced and I know I have the best hand.
So the fold and a call.
I can't call.
I know you can't call, so you need the fold, and that's fine.
Or shove. I would shove or fold. I wouldn't do this call. That's the only thing I wouldn't do is call.
Oh, my gosh. All right, we're not going to get anywhere here. We probably lost all of our listeners. So they're all on my side, too, by the way, but that's all right.
I don't think so.
All right, so the river is a tray non-flush card. We decided to call, obviously, as I mentioned.
He calls. Okay.
Yeah. He punted, and you corrected him, so he's fumbled.
Yeah.
Went off on a seven-hour argument there. It's a tray non-flush card. So our final board is queen, nine, seven, six, tray. No flushes, obviously the straight, so this shouldn't matter for anything. The pot is now, as he said, bloated to 10,800. We have 4,300 left. And the big blind goes all in. And he has us covered.
I'm calling. Screw it. It's so weird because it's hard to do this because I wouldn't have gotten in this position.
Absolutely.
You know, it's so hard.
And here's the thing. The problem with the river here is I would be shocked if the big blind didn't go all in with any hand here.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to be strong here on 2,400 on the turn and then just wimp out on the river and let us try to push him off? No, he's going to do it. He knows we have him covered. He's going to have to put us to a test. So we knew this was coming. So this is what I'm talking about on the last street. You know, I was hoping to boat up, and then it would be an easy decision. I didn't boat up, so now it's a hard decision.
Yeah.
There's a lot of money in there. If I call and I'm right, then boom, I'm right back in this tournament doing well. And if I call and I'm wrong, then I'm out. But I would have been out anyhow if I had gone all in on the turn.
Mm-hmm.
So at least now I have an option to think about. You know, again, this is the kind of stuff that people don't want to talk about, but I think people need to talk about. You know, he made a big decision to skip a couple of tournaments at his local casino, come all the way out to Vegas, enter the World Series. Does he want to go out this way? Or does he want to hold on to these last couple chips and maybe make a rally that he's going to be able to tell his grandkids about for the rest of his life? Not saying one way or the other, but he has that option now.
Man. Well, playing it the way he played it, and being in the situation he's in, I'm getting less than 3-1 on my money. I have top set, but straight does get there. In my heart, I would say that we're beat and I'm folding. In my gut, I feel like he got there and we're beat and we didn't boat up. So I would have to, if in this situation with 4,300 left, I'm going to let it go. Just because, like you said, whether it was 6,700 or 4,300, we're probably getting it in with a next decent ace or next decent pair or double paint. And it's going to be luck anyway to get us back to where we were when we started this hand.
Hey, one double up, we're right back to where we started.
Right. So
one double up.
Yeah.
That's really it.
So. Hey, you know, it's not easy to double up, though. That's one thing. You know,
but I mean,
not everybody's going to call your all in at 4,300, but.
Right.
But the blinds are going up, so.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we don't know what everybody's stacks are. I mean, we were one of the big stacks at the table with 8,500.
Right.
So it could be a lot of people with short stacks, so there could be a lot of people playing this desperate game. I mean, I think we've reached this point in this tournament where it's bingo for a lot of players.
Yeah, it's a lot. I guess I would fold. I mean, it sucks because I would have gone it all in a long time ago and then not had to worry about this. If this guy did make a straight, he wouldn't have called your all in at any point of this, so.
All right, now I'm really going to tick you off. Okay. I'm going to call here.
You're going to call?
And really, it's because I just cannot put this guy on 8-10. It just seems so ridiculous. Now, I know we limped in, or 8-5, or whatever the straight possible. I can't put him on a straight. You know, I know we gave him the option of just one bet coming in, so it's completely possible that he has that hand. And certainly we thought the blocking bet might suggest that, but that blocking bet could essentially be flopping a set and knowing that we were the under-the-gun raiser and wanted to see whether we're ready to be frisky. Now, obviously, he didn't re-raise to get all in there. Oh, actually, he called, so we couldn't have done that. So we took the option of him raising us all in at that point away from him by just calling, right?
Mm.
So then he comes out strong on turn saying, hey, all right, I got a live one. I'm going to squeeze a bunch of money out of this. And we called again. All right, fine. I'll fire again. I got it set. It's very likely that he has nines or sevens.
Well, the other thing,
like, so tens and eights.
The other thing, though, is, and you could go through the whole hand again and play it as 10-8, and it would play exactly
absolutely
the way you played out too.
Absolutely could. Yeah, I just, it seems illogical to me. So at this point, knowing the money is in there, and you know, but again, I have to go through that decision that I just mentioned about. That, you know, do I want to go out of this tournament this way, or do I want to stick around and shove another hand and start all over at where I was on this hand if I get lucky and win that one? We're in a tough situation either way, so.
Yeah, but like you said, if you call and you're wrong, you're out. And
absolutely.
If you don't call, you're still in.
But I gave myself that option, and I thought about it on the next card, and you know what? Fine, I'm in.
All right, I'm going to fold.
All right, great.
Let's see what happens.
All right, so he says, the big blind goes all in. He started the hand covering me by a bit. If I call, if I don't call, I'll be a true short stack ninja and have to call Scott Long. He says, just joshing, but no, you can call me. I would have told you you should have gone all in. he says, I still beat a lot of strong hands he could have logically played except for one, and I make the call. He turns over the 8-10 suited.
Yeah.
And all that flushing on the flop or turn was open-ended. It was straight from the flop and completed the straight on the turn. Yeah. As I have mulled his hand over off and on for the past few months, and being results-oriented, could have probably shipped and forced a fold by him on the flop for a small gain by the turn, even though, in my opinion, I played the turn screwy. It was too late to save myself whatever I did. Notwithstanding results, though, I've come to believe that I played the hand optimally given the stage of the tournament with the blinds and antes where they were, just gambled for a better return and lost. Flame away, constructively or otherwise. LOL.
Well, again, he says that he couldn't have done anything differently, but even on that turn,
yeah,
when that guy bets 2,400,
absolutely,
he could have folded and had 6,700 left.
Yeah, I think the two things is he could have shoved pre-flop, which we talked about, and he could have gotten away from it on the turn if he wanted to.
And he could have shoved on the flop, too, after the guy bet 600. Now you're hoping he has sevens.
Yeah,
you know, so yeah, there's a lot of ways you could have played this differently and had different outcomes, I think. But playing it the way he played it along the way, I think I would have folded on the end had I played it the way, you know, our hero played it.
Yeah, to me, I think a lot of players find themselves in this situation. I do all the time. And so what I've taken away from it, though, is understanding the chip stacks and where we are, and understanding when you've entered a bingo part of the tournament.
Yeah.
You know, next week's show, I'll talk about this tournament I played in Jacksonville last week. When we started off, it seemed like it was going to last forever because we had 10,000 units and 25, 50 with 30-minute levels, and it's a limit tournament. I'm like, gosh, I'm going to be here for 7 years.
Right.
And, like, six levels into it, all of a sudden, I realized everybody's playing bingo at that point. And once you get to that bingo point, then I think you got to completely shift gears and think of it as bingo and not poker at that point. And I think that's kind of the situation we were here. He probably wasn't that quite desperate, but other players probably were.
Well, yeah, the blinds are much longer in the World Series, too. They're hour-long or two-hour-long, depending on what you buy in for.
But again, we're talking 8,500. We're one of the chip leaders at the table.
Yeah.
And we've got 14 big blinds.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That's bingo.
Yeah, yep. It's crazy.
All right, Paul, we certainly appreciate you letting us flame away at you. But we're going to send you a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. You don't have to be a winner. Enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes Store. And remember to send those hands a week to podcast at anyupmagazine.com.
I want to thank Randy Keever for joining us today, talking about the Hollywood Poker Open. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
No, we're probably not going to do any editing to it necessarily. It'll be part of our show next week, though. So there'll be, you know, other stuff we talk about before that. Then we'll get to you and then end the show with something else. But it will be posted probably late Thursday afternoon next week. And then,
let's say, just for argument's sake, that 10 minutes into this thing, I say something stupid.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we absolutely can go back and do something like that, or we could stop and pause if we had to. All
right. But it has to be monumentally stupid.
Because we say stupid stuff every week.
Stupid stuff gets by us all the time. So, I mean, it has to be something like you call your boss an idiot or something, and we want to say, oh, wait, don't put that on the show, you know.